So I look like a lizard or something weird.
Hello and welcome back to Ticket A42, the Australian theatre industry podcast created in conjunction with AussieTheatre.com. I'm your host, John O'Hara, and each episode I sit down for a chat with one of Australia's most successful and interesting professionals for a bit of an insightful look into their lives, their career, and everything in between their Ticket A42 moment and now. So I'd like to introduce you to my next guest. She's one of Australia's most exciting and diverse actors and leading ladies. She's been nominated for and won multiple awards, including a Helpman for her role as Penny Pingleton in Hairspray and a Green Room Award for her critically acclaimed performance as Anne Darrow in King Kong. And she's just appeared in the restaging of Nick Enright and Max Lambert's Australian musical, Miracle City, at the Hayes Theatre. So please help me make welcome my old mate, Esther Hannaford.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
That is my pleasure. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Now, it kind of felt like after you finished King Kong in February of this year that we didn't hear from you for a little while. You kind of took a little break and just regrouped. So why don't you start by telling us what you've been working on since the show closed?
Well, since the show closed, I went on a European trip.
Yep.
I had another holiday in Bali. I did a lot of writing. I think I just needed to kind of refill the well after, you know, a kind of couple of years doing sort of developing the work and then, you know, doing the show for 14 months.
Yep.
And I've been doing a lot of writing, working on my music.
Yep.
I've done a few developments for different sort of shows that in the works. So that's really what I was doing in the lead up to doing Miracle City.
Yeah. And why don't you talk a little bit about your music that you've been writing and your upcoming album that you're about to release?
Yeah, I'm about to release an EP next February, and I also made a film clip for that this year with my brother and his partner from the Australian Ballet, and Alice Topp, who's also in the Australian Ballet and an amazing contemporary choreographer. So my music, it's a 4-track EP.
Yep.
And I had lots of beautiful musicians and artists that worked on the record with me.
And it's called The Great Egret.
The Great Egret.
So explain that.
Which is a bird, which is, the main sort of the single from the EP is called The Great Egret. And that is sort of like the death of fantasy, and that's to do with romance and love. And there's this test that you can do where you find out like what your perfect mate is, and you kind of go through sort of different things. And oh, it's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But anyway, my perfect mate was the Great Egret.
Uh-huh.
When you get to the end of this sort of challenge that you do.
Amazing.
And
Amazing. And you kind of touched on the point, like we've spoken in private before, but your brother and his partner filmed the music clip for, or the film clip for it? Is that what
it is? Look, you know, the song is about me, of course,
yeah,
but I guess I always had in my mind that I really wanted the boys to dance together, because the song really is about the death of the fantasy and being, you know, the ideal of what a love relationship is. And,
yeah,
you know, and I believe that it can be anything. You know, we're all individual human beings, so each love should be completely individual to those people. So, my brother and his partner, Kevin, have been together for like 8 years. They're just a gorgeous, beautiful couple, and
yeah,
I've never seen them dance together because they're both ballet dancers. But, you know, it's, not often that you get to see a pas de deux with the two boys, and
yeah,
I just had that in my mind, and it's so special and beautiful, and I can't wait to show everyone.
And you said to me earlier that you felt like that visual side of the music was really important. You kind of wanted to release them both at the same time.
Yeah. The music's been done for a while, but I really wanted to make sure that it's kind of cinematic, the music, you know. It's not like not to say that it doesn't stand alone, but I feel like I always had the image with it. So I just, for me as an artist, I wanted to make sure that I put them out together the
Can't
way I saw
wait.
It.
Can't wait. And then Miracle City.
Yes.
That just blew everyone away. I saw it, and anyone that saw it will agree. Everyone just loved it.
Yeah, it was a great show to be a part of, and it was a great one for me just to sort of, you know, get back performing in front of a crowd again. It was a much smaller crowd, and it was a great experience.
Yeah, and you seem to have this, look, you've worked with Max Lambert on King Kong and on Hairspray and on Miracle City. Is that a kind of beautiful working relationship? You feel safe with him? And
I feel so safe with him, and I feel like he's an artist, and he, in the sense that he, you know, every night will work with you to make the piece of music work. And, you know, we would always sort of workshop things in rehearsals, but I've never actually done a show where he played every night with me, and so that was a particularly special experience in Miracle City.
And for anyone that was at this year's Light the Night concert, the wonderful fundraising concert to raise money for leukemia research, you sang your song from the show with Max. It was so beautiful.
Thanks, John. It's a beautiful song. It's just, I think people can relate, you know, no matter what you're kind of going through, and it's all relative to the person, but, you know, I'll Hold On, you know, we can all, I think people really relate to that.
Yeah, and the good news is that you guys also recorded our cast album.
I haven't heard it yet, but I'm really excited.
So how did that happen? Did you go in the studio? Was it kind of taken from the performances?
Yeah, from the performances. Yeah. Sean came in to do that. So we did some pickups, but mainly it's from live, I think, over a week's worth of shows. So hopefully I nailed one of them and it'll sound okay.
I'm sure you know more than one of them. Now, some of our listeners wouldn't know this about you, but you have been performing from a very young age, and as you've also mentioned your brother already, but you come from a hugely artistic family, right, from your mom, and, you know, both your brothers are performers, and your sister was an agent for a little while.
Yes, and they're both designers now, my other two sisters, so it's very arty.
Really arty. So tell us a little bit what it was like growing up in such a huge artistic family in Camberwell, in Melbourne, in that huge big house that you have. You know, it's kind of eclectic and amazing.
What was it like? If I think of the arty times, I think of like Saturday nights, and we'd put on the, you know, Tina Arena album or the Priscilla soundtrack, or and just dance the night away. Like, my mom was a real sort of extrovert, artistic woman, and we'd, you know, all dance all day, you know, Saturdays, and I don't know, you know, during the week it was just school times, but I remember on, you know, often on these Saturday nights we'd have sort of big dance and sing-alongs, and we'd do shows for each other, and I don't know, all that stuff that, you know, usual performy kids do and show off to each other.
That's amazing. And you, I mean, you've worked quite a lot with Ross over the years. Ross Hannaford is a very established performer in his own right too.
Yeah, so of course.
That must have been nice to kind of be on King Kong together, especially.
Yes, I don't think I could have done it without him, you know, because it was such a big show, and, you know, it was so wonderful in so many ways, but it was a massive challenge for me. And so he was there every step of the way to support and, you know, be a sounding board.
I don't mean to say missed, but you didn't go down that traditional route of going to a drama school or anything like that. So what was your training like to kind of get you to this point?
My training was probably training to try and train, which was private stuff. I did a foundation course at the National Theatre, and then it was always sort of masterclasses and, you know, private singing lessons, practicing every day. I just love singing practice. So like near on 10 years, would almost do it daily. Like, I just, that's sort of what I did.
Yeah.
And with drama stuff, it's always been sort of either private or master classes. Yeah, I would have loved to have trained, but, you know, I didn't get the opportunity. So I've just done little bits and pieces like that and, you know, learned from the people that I've worked with, taken note, asked a lot of questions.
I think that's wonderful. You know, so many people kind of think that you have to go to NIDA or you have to go to WAPA or VCA, but your proof that, you know, it's not the only way, and
it's not the only way, and that's a great way. Gosh, you know, like, I would have loved to, but I think there is other ways. If that's not, you know, on the cards for you, then it shouldn't be, you know, a reason to not, you know, plow forward with it, for sure.
Yeah. Now, we've touched on it a little bit, but I couldn't do this interview without talking about King Kong.
Of course.
So it was kind of a game changer in what, you know, had been accomplished from a technological point of view on a stage anywhere in the world. And with that, I guess, comes huge attention and pressure and excitement.
Yep.
So, you know, what was all of that like, you know, in a nutshell? I mean, maybe let's start with the audition process. Was that was quite involved and went for a long time.
Yeah, that went for a long time. So I did, you know, a couple, maybe 3 months of auditions, mm-hmm. and then did a workshop, which felt like, you know, a 2-week audition, which you did a big showing audition at the end.
Yeah.
And then after that, I got the job. So it was a good sort of 4 months of, you know, working towards it and, you know, trying to, you know, make it whatever they wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And then after that, we did another workshop where other people were still auditioning and doing all that sort of stuff. So it was a good, you know, for the whole thing, a year-long sort of process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you ever think, oh God, I've got myself in too deep. I don't want to get the job, you know. Or was it just you just kind of kept working, you know, towards?
I think there's a bit of that, but there's also, I don't know, that sort of hunger to work and to, you know, I really felt like I connected with the role and the way that, you know, the writer and the director saw it, which they saw it completely different to what I saw it as. You know, when people said it was first coming out, I was like, didn't even cross my mind to audition. I thought, as if, like, why would I even go for that? But then once they sort of talked to me about, you know, the farm girl aspect and that she comes from, you know, a different kind of upbringing and she's, you know, I don't know, a different kind of woman.
Yeah.
That, you know, I kind of kept going with it.
Uh-huh. And you tell me about playing opposite a massive puppet, you know. That must have been that comes with its own challenges and, you know, it must have been difficult at times.
Because of the workshops that we did with Harley playing King Kong, I don't know if people have heard this story, but there was an actor who's an amazing circus performer and just a really grounded, beautiful actor who played King Kong for all of the rehearsals, all of the workshops. So, and he also operated the voice and
part of the animatronic.
It was live. Yeah. So I feel like if it wasn't live, that would have been really difficult because I like to keep things fresh and, you know, not stick always to the same show. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he would – I don't know. Because of him, we wasn't.
Yeah.
It was actually a real joy and it was sort of improvised to a point every night, you know, like working with another actor.
Yeah. It was there – I was there opening night in Melbourne and my God, having known you for so long, it was – you were so mesmerizing in the role and you brought such individual qualities to the role. It was just – it was wonderful and I think everyone agrees with that.
Thanks, John.
That's my
That was pleasure. Terrifying. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, of course. It must – I thought that. I kind of sat there thinking, are you just – packing your dacks, you know, but
I just had to pretend it was a normal night. Like I couldn't let anyone bring flowers in or, you know, anything of the usual, you know, oh, happy opening night. I just had to be like, it's not opening night.
Yeah.
Let's do this thing, you know, and just focus on the story. But yeah, oh my God.
And then, you know, in terms of, you know, the company Global Creatures who produced the show and the attention that it brought from around the world because, you know, the intention was always to take it to Broadway and all of that stuff. How was that pressure? Did you feel the pressure of the eyes of the theatrical world kind of looking at the production and you being in one of the central roles, if not the central role, the human central role? Was that difficult?
I did feel it, but I think for me personally, I felt proud that I didn't sort of feel it too much. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I felt it enough that, you know, realistically is if you're not going to feel it, but, you know, not enough to, you know, sort of freak me right out and throw me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so it was a challenge for sure.
Yeah. And you met your love at the moment on that show, Chris Ryan.
Chris Ryan.
Who also played opposite, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of a love triangle there between the ape and you and Chris.
Yep. So on stage I chose the ape, but off stage.
Well, that must have been nice to kind of go through that process together as well, you know.
Yeah, it was. And look, we didn't really make anything between us official until we finished the show because we're old enough to know that the showmance exists and, you know, often it is just an onstage magic that you know, might not translate into reality. So, yeah, it's really just been this year.
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Now, in the last few years, this is my opinion, you've kind of established yourself as a bit of an indie darling of our industry, and you seem to move between genres seamlessly, but all the while staying true to yourself and kind of cleverly breaking down the conventions of what, you know, people might think a music theatre performer is, or what an actor is, or what a singer is. Was that a conscious decision for you? Because I feel like you've really come into your own in the last few years.
I'm not sure if it was a conscious decision. One thing that was a conscious decision was to find my own voice because I, you know, like I said, had been practicing in my room and, you know, working on this kind of musical theatre sound. Mm-hmm. And then I started working with the Four Larks, which is kind of a junkyard opera indie theatre company down in Melbourne. And it was through working with them that I sort of, they were like, yep, just sing your song. And I thought everyone else is just singing in their voices because a lot of them are, you know, singers and recording artists in their own right. And I didn't know what to do. So I think from then maybe there was a shift in me to kind of be like, well, who am I as an artist and what is my voice and what do I want to contribute? And it wasn't so much about musical theatre, but it was more about me, discovering. I didn't want to never know what that was. When I get to the end of my career. I kind of,
Which was watching you in King Kong, just going back to it for a sec, It did, like having known you for a while, it felt like you had this new voice, which was your voice, you know, and that was so wonderful that you were allowed in such a big commercial production to use your own voice.
Yeah. You know? And like I said, because I really didn't think I was right for the show, so I thought, look, I'm going to go into the audition, I'm going to sing, you know, how I've been singing for the last couple of years when I do my sort of, you know, little bits and pieces and when I record my music. And I did. I went in and sung this jazz song in my own voice and they really liked it. Yeah. So, you know, whereas normally maybe they would have been like, get out of here.
You'll get out of here.
Yeah.
And what are your, you know, what are your wishes for the future going into 2015? You're going to launch your EP, obviously.
Yeah. Look, I just like to keep working on interesting projects, whether they be, you know, music or theatre or a bit of both. I just want to always keep challenging myself. I think that's what excites me about performing.
Great.
Yeah.
Now, look, that's the hard stuff over. So everyone that comes on our show, or my show, does the Ticket A42 test. And the great thing is you get 100% because there's no wrong answers.
Yay.
So let's kick off. So the first question is called The Kid in A42, which references obviously the name of the show and the moment that I knew that I wanted to be a performer. Did you have a moment that you knew that you wanted to be on the stage watching in the audience?
I wasn't in the audience. I was actually on stage and it was my first, because, you know, my mum used to kind of take us to auditions and we'd do this stuff and, you know, I hadn't really thought about it as a career or anything like that. I used to just dance and got into this show, Scrooge, and I was 12 years old and I remember it was Christmas Eve and it was Scrooge and it was set on Christmas Eve and I remember the magic was kind of palpable on and off the stage and in the audience and, you know, being surrounded by performers like Max Gillies and William Zappa and Keith Michella who, you know, and Tony Taylor. I didn't realize at the time I was in the, you know,
presence of greatness.
Yeah. And it was kind of that magic more than a like, it was that, you know, theatre can actually sort of transcend other things and move you to this place where everyone in, you know, either watching it or backstage feels that certain magic. And so I think it's that high from that just made me, I don't know, I'm just chasing, always chasing that high,
yeah.
I think. It was also like I remember after that, shortly after that, watching Deborah Byrne in Les Mis.
Uh-huh.
And that was certainly a moment.
Yeah.
Of being so moved. And it wasn't like I've never been like, oh, I want to be up there doing it. But I remember being so moved and wondering like, I don't know, wondering what that was and,
yes.
you know, how to feel that again.
Yeah. Well, mine was Deborah Byrne in Sunset Boulevard.
Ah,
and that was the
there
same
you go.
Kind of,
she's a legend.
Just, yeah.
Unbelievable.
I'd never seen her live before that time and I just
yeah.
couldn't. I was like, whoa, you know.
You can feel.
Yeah.
You feel everything that she sings.
She goes there. Yeah, she 100% goes there. Okay, this is what's got your goat. So you tell me something that's really pissing you off at the moment.
At the moment, nothing. What's pissing me off at the moment?
Or something that kind of gets you,
okay.
You know?
Okay, in theatre. I'm just keeping it to theatre things. And right. This one might be a little bit controversial.
Uh-huh.
But when, you know, we're all backstage and it's sort of a communal area, I'm not a big fan of people singing.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, if 20 people are all singing their own individual song, it's sort of, you know, can be quite full on.
Yeah.
And that, I know it's going to be controversial because it's a musical. It's a musical. But I love it when people do a show for you. Like if
yeah.
they like claim the space and, you know, a show's happening
yeah.
in the green room or
yeah.
backstage. I'm all for all that. But like 20 people singing, you know.
Well, you know.
Defying gravity. It's like, oh, it's just a bit much for me personally.
I
like
agree.
A bit of quiet.
I agree with you. And. Well, for those of you that don't know, we're coming to you from the Wicked dressing rooms today. That's our studio. And at the Capitol Theatre. And the rehearsal room is on the third floor and the dressing rooms are in the basement. So there's five levels. And you can't use the lift here after the half-hour call in case you get stuck in it.
Yes.
Which is a theatre rule in most theatres that have a lift. But when we finish warm-ups on the third level and we have to come down five levels of stairs... Sometimes that happens. There's, you know, a cast of 30 people singing in a concrete stairwell. And honestly, your ears feel like they're going to explode. However, I do love all of the Wicked cast. I love you all. And I'm guilty of singing too.
Oh, and I'm guilty of singing too. But when I notice, I go, oh, no, don't,
yeah.
stop. Whereas yeah. I don't think some people. Oh, anyway, I'm sorry.
It doesn't matter. Hey, this is very superstitious. So us theatrical creatures, some of us are superstitious. We have little rituals that we like to take seriously while we're doing a show. Do you have any?
It depends. Yeah, each show I do have rituals that I do, but I've tried to break them
yeah.
The older I get. Because I remember on Mamma Mia, by the end of the tour, I was so tired because the whole show was just – the backstage show was way more busy than on stage. You know, it was slapping that person on the bum, giving them a lolly there, you know, making sure you high-five that person. And it got to the point where I was like, I had to even get the understudies to do it. And when
yeah.
they'd go on all, you know, and it's just – it was a bit much.
Too much.
And it was a bit too much for everyone. And so I sort of learned from there I need to cool my jets. And
okay.
So no, you know, I think just things like yoga and warm-ups
yeah.
and, you know,
yeah.
I used to in King Kong I'd have like an orange
yep.
and I'd cut it
oh,
up before each show and have an
that.
Orange and then I'd like spray this like orange stuff. I don't know why. It was just like this thing that I did and I
yeah.
like that smell of orange.
Citrus. Tell me the five things you can't live without.
My family.
Yes.
My friends.
Yes.
I don't know, food.
Yes.
And
music.
Music. Well, creativity for sure.
Yeah.
In all its forms. And
yeah.
food. And wine.
And wine. Awesome. Diva Tanti. So we've all thrown them in the workplace. We've all seen them thrown by other people in the workplace. Are you willing to share with me a story of a diva tanti you might have thrown or seen?
Oh, look, I've seen some tanties.
Yeah.
Nothing I'm willing to disclose, but they are, you know, we're a dramatic bunch of people, so they're good when they happen.
Yeah.
No, me, I'm more of a brooder. I'm more of a, you know, I'm annoyed, but I'm not going to yell and I go all the, you know, steam coming out of my ears.
Uh-huh.
I'm also a bit of a laugher.
Yeah.
So often if there's sort of confrontation happening or, this one happened to me recently, like a big confrontation happening to someone else, and it was all really full on, and I just hysterically started laughing because I just sort of look at it from the outside thinking, this is crazy, like this is absurd.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, I've got myself into trouble from doing that because people think I'm, you know, not taking it seriously, but it's really just because it makes me uncomfortable and... Seems bizarre to me. But anyway, that's me.
That's you. Okay, phone a friend. Who do you call if you... Who's your one-stop shop, you know?
Probably Verity. Verity.
Yep, Verity Hunt Ballard.
Yep.
Who we all know is a lovely, wonderful, incredible human and actress.
Yeah, she's very down to earth and, you know, we can... Yeah.
Yeah. How did you guys... How did you guys meet?
We met doing Virgins way back when.
Which is written by?
Dean Bryant and Matthew Frank.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I met Vez, you know, a good 10 years ago and we've just stayed friends since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So we talked about the showbiz, showmance, show crush before, but, you know.
Yes.
You get them. We all do. They defy age and sexuality and availability. Have you had a huge show crush? Or do you have one at the moment?
I probably have one on Blazey Best.
Oh, she's amazing.
She's amazing.
Yeah, I've never
seen
her do anything.
She was a real inspiration on and off the stage. She's such a hard worker.
She was in Miracle City. She played.
Yes, sorry. She was in Miracle City. She was the lead. She's an amazing actress, a real team player, really joyous, good fun, but very hardworking and really brilliant at what she does.
Can I ask a question about Blazey Best? That's just come to me.
Okay.
When I saw the show, I didn't really know anything about the show. For those people that haven't seen the show, at the end of this production, Blazey comes out in the last scene, kind of stripped of all of the hair and the makeup and the costumes that she'd worn. And it was so exposing. And I felt like as an audience member, you'd kind of held on to getting too emotional throughout the story. But when she came out, it was such a kind of a visual shock that I and the person sitting next to me both kind of cried and just it was a huge release. So was that in any way her idea or decision to be that stripped of the wigs and the hair and the makeup? Or was that, you know, how did that come about?
I think you'd probably have to ask Blazey, but I know that in the 96 production that a similar thing did happen, that, you know, throughout the whole show she's taking wigs on and off and then when she came back out she had de-robed, I guess.
Yeah. So powerful.
So powerful.
And
yeah, because the whole rest of the show is, you know, is lots of makeup, lots of wigs. Yeah. It's all about appearance. It's all about putting off a, you know, a front of happiness and joyousness and the reality when she – I think that's what it is that reality when she walks out and goes, no, this is actually what's happening.
Yeah.
And she looked completely different as well. Like some people were like, who's that new actress just walked out onto stage?
Initially, you know? I thought, who the hell is this? Yeah. And it's too late to introduce a new character. You know? Amazing, amazing. Yeah. Genie in a bottle. A genie grants you three wishes.
Oh.
What are they?
Oh, what's a good wish? Okay. Oh, okay. I would like to be able to go to the bottom of the ocean. But not be scared and be able to see because I know it's pitch black down there.
Uh-huh.
But not die.
Yeah.
But mainly not be scared and to have that quiet and like the bizarre animals and they're not allowed to eat me either. And, you know, anyway, so that would be one. And that's a selfish one.
No, they're allowed to be selfish.
What's another one?
It's nearly Christmas. I mean, what do you want for Christmas?
You, John.
You can have me.
As Mariah Carey would say. Okay. Oh, this would be like a social a psychological experiment that I would just love to see what would happen if people, the whole of the human race, would practice mindfulness for maybe like, I don't know, like half an hour a day and just to see how that actually, see if or what happens to us as a race.
Interesting.
Yes, that would be something I would love to see. And I don't know, what else, John? Something else. Well, lots of happiness for, you know, all my, for everyone.
Yeah.
That's it. You know.
Amazing.
World peace.
World peace. I wish for world peace. Switcheroo, you get to ask me a question.
Oh.
I'll answer anything.
Oh, genie in a bottle. What are your three?
Oh, okay. That's really hard. I wish that Perth was closer to the East Coast because my family live in Perth and I miss them so much.
Yeah.
Especially now my brother and his wife are having babies and they sent me this little video of my nephew Finn on the beach yesterday and I got it mid-show and just burst into tears, you know. I just miss them so much. I wish that a radio station would hire me to be their breakfast radio host. That would be cool.
That would be so cool.
Yeah. And I also wish that I could originate a role in a musical sometime soonish. They're my three wishes.
Yay.
Switcheroo. Tell me a secret skill that you have that not anyone would know about. What are you clever at?
Oh, I can roll a play. That's not really a secret skill. I can turn my tongue upside down.
Can you? Mm-hmm. Show me. Wowzers.
So I look like a lizard or something weird? Yes, there we go. That's my secret skill.
I wish people could see you turning your tongue
up. No, I'm so glad they can't.
All right. Accent and dialect. Tell me what you're going to do after you leave me here today in an accent and dialect of your choice. Okay. What are you good at? And I'll try and pick it. I'll try and guess it.
I think you'll know this one. I'm not known for my accents. I'm actually getting on a plane down to Melbourne tonight and I'm going to do a workshop of a new musical over the weekend. So that's what I'm doing.
Amazing. Southern. I mean,
like terrible Southern.
But that I love it. That was Miracle City really, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I love it. I'm going on a plane. All right. This is this or that. So I'm going to fire kind of 30 questions at you.
Okay.
You just have to tell me one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think too much about it. Here we go. Sweet or savory?
Savory.
Dog or cat?
Dog.
Tea or coffee?
Tea.
Entree or dessert?
Dessert.
Black or white?
Black.
In or out?
In.
Up or down?
Up.
Left or right?
Left.
Walk or run?
Walk.
Summer or winter?
Winter.
Sydney or Melbourne?
No, I love Melbourne.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying Sydney.
Good. Beer or wine?
Wine.
Diamonds or pearls?
Diamonds.
Top or bottom?
Top.
Love or money?
Love.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Salt or pepper?
Salt.
Boxes or briefs?
Briefs.
Paper or plastic?
Paper.
Christmas or birthdays?
Birthdays.
Kisses or hugs?
Kisses.
Hot or cold?
Hot.
Boy or girl?
Boy.
Bad or good?
Bad.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Wrong or right?
Wrong.
Mates or dates?
Dates.
Day or night?
Day. I'm not even listening anymore. I'm just saying like whatever word.
His or hers?
His.
Me or you?
You.
Oh, you're very kind. Now, look. We're coming to the end of our time together. You were so scared at the beginning, but it's been so fun, see? Let's shamelessly plug all of the things that you are working on and bringing out. So for our listeners, Esther's EP called The Great Egret.
Yes.
Will be available from February.
Yes,
next year.
Yes. And you can follow me on Twitter or my Instagram and I'll be putting the information out on there. It'll be on iTunes and
amazing.
You can, I've actually printed a 7-inch vinyl as well. So you can have a hard copy if you have a record player.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'll be launching it with the video. So Brilliant. Maybe we'll do a little party in Melbourne or something like that too. So.
Absolutely. And the Miracle City cast recording will also be available at some point.
Yeah, in the new year. It'll be in the early new year.
Yeah. So we'll keep you updated through the Hayes Theatre stuff and I'm assuming they'll release it on iTunes and stuff as well.
Yeah, they'll do all of that stuff, yeah.
As Esther mentioned, you can follow her on Instagram and Twitter. Her Instagram is Esther Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and her Twitter is Esther Hannaford.
Yep, that's it. So interesting.
No,
it's just
easy
my name
to remember. So
great.
Follow her and keep updated about her EP. If you would like to contact me or send me a little message, I'm John James O'Hara on Instagram or Twitter. And obviously, if you want to go to the AussieTheatre.com website /ticketA42, anything that we've spoken about today will be on the information page. And please always use the hashtag #ticketA42 when you're contacting me, so I can see what you're saying. Merry Christmas, Esther.
And to you, John. Have a great one and a great new year.
I will. Thank you so much for being my guest, my last for 2014.
Well, thank you and congratulations on a great podcast. Not that, you know, your podcast.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast was produced by Matt Edwards for AussieTheatre.com.